Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlicks.com. PureFlicks.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Hey, what's going on? It's Billy Hollowell, and welcome to this week's episode of the Pure Flicks Podcast. I am super excited today because there are two people on the show who I've actually wanted to talk to. One of them I talk to relatively frequently, and the other one is somebody I've not talked with, and it's Craig Melvin. So Craig Melvin is, and you may recognize his name, he is on the Today Show. He's also an anchor on MSNBC. Now, Craig actually went viral recently, and it was a story we had on the Pure Flicks Insider. I know a lot of other people covered it too, but our story went pretty viral, and it was this moment that Craig had Pastor T.D. Jakes on his show, and they were talking, and at the end, impromptu, Craig says, "Hey, would you be willing to pray for us?" And so you had this stunning moment in which an anchor is asking a pastor to pray on the air in the middle of this coronavirus chaos that we're all experiencing. It was a really touching moment for a lot of people. And so I reached out to Craig and connected with his team and wanted to have him on today. So we're going to actually talk to him in a minute just about not only that moment, but about his faith, his life, his journey to NBC. And so with no further ado, let's just dive right in on that. Now we're going to pick up the interview here where Craig is talking about that moment that he asked T.D. Jakes to actually pray and the amazing response that unfolded due to that. So let's roll our interview with Craig Melvin right now.
Yeah, you know, the Bishop Jakes moment, as it's sort of become, was totally totally unscripted. I've had him on a number of times. I've been a fan of Bishop Jakes for years. Thoroughly enjoy his message. And we got to the end of the segment, and I honestly, I can't remember exactly what we were talking about, but in that moment, it felt like we could collectively, we could use a little prayer, and he was there, and I was there, without giving my producer or the directors a heads up, I asked him to bow and pray, and he did, and I didn't know what he was going to say. He's not a hugely political person, so that wasn't my concern, but you know, folks of a lot of different faiths watch the news. I didn't want to offend, and his prayer was it was inoffensive. It included I thought everyone of all faiths. So yeah, but you know, I grew up in South Carolina, and I went to church. I'm Baptist, and you know, my older brother is a Baptist minister. And
oh, wow. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time in church. There's a comedian who years ago, when I heard him say it resonated with me. He said, you know, when I was a kid, I would be in church on Sunday for 4 or 5 hours. And during the week, we would have meetings at church. I was in church so much. Finally, one Sunday, it was like 4 p.m. and I looked up at my mom. I said, "Mom, just let me go to hell. It can't be as bad as this."
Well, you know, a lot of our listeners, right? So a lot of people listening right now, they are people of faith. And I think what's interesting about the moment that we're in right now, because of everything that's happening, I think so many people are feeling like they're even, I mean, listen, I've been a lifelong Christian. Doesn't matter where you are. There's a lot of questions that pop up when these things happen, right? So there's people who have questions and people are looking for hope. And so at the end of the day, regardless of where people are spiritually, what faith they are, that moment that you ushered in, and I had a feeling watching it, it was pretty impromptu. It just kind of happened. I think it really resonated for a lot of people. What did you hear afterward?
I was pleasantly surprised that, quite frankly, that there were so many people who felt the same way I felt in that moment, that we needed prayer and we needed to pray together. Naturally you hear from detractors, you know, it's a news show. If I wanted to have someone beat me over the head with the Bible. I turned to it, and that wasn't what it was. That wasn't what the moment was about. That's not what my faith is about. But the lion's share of folks who saw that on television, and more folks saw it online, you know, social media and whatnot. It was very positive. And as you just pointed out, like we are living in the most unusual time of my life, where people, especially during this Holy Week, people are being asked. Actually, people are in some cases essentially being forced to stay away from each other. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I maintain there is this new connectedness that has emerged from this. I don't think as many people fully appreciated how much we actually need to interact with each other face to face. Like that is part of who we are as creatures of God. That's part of who we are as just human beings. And it's easy in this age of, you know, 140 characters and tweets and TikToks and you know, you get wrapped up in all of that. I don't think a lot of people fully appreciated how much we needed the old-fashioned face-to-face communication, the old-fashioned handshake or hug or touch on the arm. I think that's going to be one good thing, one positive that comes out of all of this.
You know, we're all sort of on this playing field right now that everybody's home, everybody's thinking. I mean, you can't go out to movie theaters, you can't go out to nightclubs, you can't go out to church, you can't go anywhere right now. And so I think it's this moment of being forced to almost think about life and what it really means. And it's this weird, and I think for a lot of us, I know you've got kids, I've got a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, we're trying to figure out how to be homeschool parents suddenly, right, while we're working and doing everything we need to do. But I think there's this weird busyness going on, but at the same time, this you know, I guess solitude at the same time, we're with our families, we're thinking, and at a time when we've come out and we're still in the midst of, and we know we have an election coming up, it's a hard time. There's a lot of division, there has been for a long time, yet everyone's kind of in this together. And I saw one report, it was a poll, and I don't have it in front of me, I think it might have been Barna, saying that there were 21% of people who are not self-identified Christians who are reading their Bibles right now, who weren't reading it before this started. And I thought it's just so interesting to me how we react in these moments. But to your point, I think it's a real moment for us to say, what is it that we need as human beings? What are the things we were taking for granted that are so simple? So you've been in media for a long time. You've had a really incredible career and continue to have one. What was it for you that drove the passion that actually got you into media in the first place?
I'm a sucker for a good story, Billy. always have been. And when I was 16 years old, I was at home watching probably the Flintstones or Tom and Jerry. Those were my go-to cartoons back then, but. And there was a commercial that popped up, and they were looking for a reporter, a teenage reporter, high school reporter, who would work with a producer and another reporter in the TV newsroom in Columbia, South Carolina, where I'm from. And together they would create these stories that would actually air on the evening news. And these would be stories that were of particular interest to high school students. So teens in smoking and teens in seatbelt safety and teens in SAT preparation. I did a story I went down to the mall and I auditioned and I got the job. And I, 16 years old, I did this story on my favorite teacher at the time, my AP World History teacher. His name's Mike Fanning. And I get a call one day from the news director at this TV station. And he said, "Hey, I, you know, just wanted you to know that your story on your teacher, it won this Associated Press competition for best education story." To which I said, "Did no one else enter the competition? were there no other applicants?" And he said, "No, there are other applicants, and they just liked your story." And so I went to the awards banquet day, and I'll never forget what the news director, a guy named Randy Covington, said to me at the time. He said, "If there's ever anything I can do for you, if you ever think that you might want to go into this field, let me know." Fast forward 5, 6 years. I'm in college studying government and thought maybe I wanted to go to law school, maybe go to D.C., work on the Hill, which I did for about a month or two. And that was all I needed to realize that's not what I wanted to do with my life. And I needed to find a job. My mom was a high school teacher. My dad was a mail clerk. We didn't have a bunch of money lying around the house. So I had to graduate in 4 years and get a job. So I called up the news director, who was still there, a guy named Randy Covington, and he hired me with little to no experience. And I learned the business in my local TV newsroom. I was a producer. I was a photographer. I worked the news desk, and eventually I became a reporter, and that's just kind of how I worked my way up, and was in Columbia, South Carolina until I was 28, and I got a call from New York asking if I'd ever thought about leaving, and I was very honest. My entire family is in South Carolina, with the exception of one cousin who's in Chicago, but all of my family's still there. I was like, well, I really haven't really thought about leaving. Had a pretty good life at that point. And then the woman on the other end of the phone, she said, well, if you were to leave, where would you go? And I started naming cool cities that I'd visited. One of them was Washington, D.C., and I went to Washington on a job interview, and that was it. I was hooked, and that was 2008. And I've been part of the NBC family ever since then, 3 years in Washington, and then 2011, my wife and I moved to New York.
You know, it's
we live in Connecticut. I work in New York.
So you commute in, and that's an incredible story. I love that, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, God kind of puts desires in our hearts. I started in media when I was 15, and it's just funny because I hear these stories, and it happens in every field, but, you know, God kind of puts that in your heart and you move forward. But what a really cool story as well about your boss, who, you know, you encountered at that young age and who actually brought you in later on. It's just, there's some really great themes in that, I think, especially for us as adults, looking back to how we mentor and how we connect with younger people who have passions for media or for other fields as well. Now, having said all that and hearing that journey, there's so many amazing things about working in media. What are some of the challenges of working in media in the modern era with so many changes, especially in the last 15 years with technology and just the way information flows?
Oh, gosh. Oh, the challenges. They're myriad. One of the greatest challenges, it's great now, and I think it's only going to become even more difficult. And I want to be very careful here in how I say it, because I certainly don't want to put down anyone's particular source of information. One thing that has started to happen, and it started, I mean, I think when the book is written on the death of modern democracy, and that book hopefully won't be written for generations, there will be a few chapters devoted to the role that social media has played in it. Social media hasn't helped. The fact that someone can read something on Facebook or Twitter or wherever they get their information, and they read it and they accept it as fact. And when Craig Melvin or Lester Holt or Savannah Guthrie or Chuck Todd, or when we say something, when we report something on the air, it's been vetted. It's been double sourced. It is information that is demonstrably true. You would be surprised, maybe you wouldn't be surprised, how many people now regard the same information that's written by some man or woman sitting in his mother's basement, who's been writing opinion their entire career. All of a sudden, that opinion has become fact. And we now have a system, unfortunately, where we can't even agree on the color of the sky.
Agreed.
We can't start with a baseline of facts, and that makes, you know, that makes things challenging. I mean, even now, in the middle of this pandemic, there are a lot of folks who don't trust, you know, Dr. Anthony Fauci, or they believe that the motivations of certain scientists are sinister. And that's troubling. And that's not something that's going to improve. So that's one challenge. I would say that the other challenge is just the collective attention span of viewers and listeners and readers. I call them news grazers, Billy. People who they read the headline or the first two sentences of a story, or they hear the first 30 seconds of a story, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I got that. I understand it." And they don't,
because they haven't read it.
No, they haven't read it. And they go around spewing headlines, and it's, "Oh yeah, I read this. I saw this." And it's, so, you know, the age of misinformation and disinformation, the age in which we found ourselves, it's a bit challenging. However, and you'll discover this about me, I'm a firm believer in it's never as bad as some people say that it is. And it's also never as good as mm-hmm. some people claim that it is, but it's never as bad. I think this is a pendulum that swings back. I think that we get to a point in our society where there once again is a great regard for objective truth.
I agree. Listen,
now, that happens, I don't know, but it's going to happen.
Well, and the thing too, and I think this is the convicting part, and I won't make you say this, I will say this. My view is that, you know, as Christians, if we're going to say, okay, I'm a Christian, I believe in truth, well, you're actually called to not then put a party or an ideology or a viewpoint on any issue before what the truth is. And to me, as I'm watching all of this and looking at it, and I'm saying, okay, well, there is a truth, and we need to try to figure that out. And sometimes things are complicated and they require really diving deep. And sometimes there are gray areas, but the reality is that when we start to put the other things in front of what we believe the ultimate truth should be, that's a real problem. And, you know, so for me, that's been a convicting thing over the last couple of years as all of this has happened. And it's forced me to kind of go back to the drawing board many times and to say, okay, but maybe I was wrong about that, or maybe I shouldn't have said it that way or thought about it that way. And so it's what you've said. I think you're absolutely right. The pendulum does swing back at some point as well. And with that, I want to ask you just, you know, how does... And this is, you know, it's a strange question, but I think it's an important one. And then I'll let you go because I know you have a lot going on. But how has faith for you helped inspire your media career?
That's a good question. You know, I think a number of levels. It informs the kinds of stories that I most enjoy covering, the kinds of stories that I pitch to cover. It informs how I tell those stories. I not to, you know, sound whatever, Billy, but I've always been able to connect with different kinds of people, regardless of where they're from or how they grew up or the color of their skin or even their faith. And I think one of the reasons that I'm able to do that, first of all, I think that's one of the things that God blessed me with was an ability to empathize. And that's actually one of the traits that I really work on with my kids more than anything else. But I digress. I think that my faith has helped me connect with people on a number of levels over the course of my career. In stories, because we're all the same. And by that I mean, I'm not saying I'm one of these people that doesn't see race and doesn't see class, and that's not true. But I am, as a consequence of my faith, I am able to see myself in just about everyone. And that ability to relate, that comes from my faith.
I love
that. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. I mean, that's the power. That's how we should be, though, right? I mean, I think that, you know, that has nothing to do with changing a truth that we believe. It has to do with how we're supposed to love and interact with others. I mean, that's the kind of what you've just described, I feel like, is the balance we should all kind of have, regardless of what we believe or what we think about anything. So no, it makes absolute sense to me. It really does. And I would imagine there are moments your media career has also challenged or impacted your faith as well in some ways. I can't speak for you, but I would imagine that's the case.
Yes. You see things, especially for me. I've covered a lot of the mass shootings in my career. And as I tell people all the time, unfortunately, when you see me coming with a camera, it's either someone's having a really good day or somebody's having a really bad day. Network news crews don't show up for those in-between days. So I catch a lot of people on a really bad day, whether they've lost someone on a mass shooting or lost someone in war or lost someone to a coronavirus. And you see that after a few years, and it does one of two things. It either makes you numb, and if it starts to make you numb, then you should probably find another line of work, or it makes you start to question your faith. And I've had a number of conversations over the years with members of the clergy about this very question. How can it be that a kid goes out on a Saturday night in Ohio to have a good time, and he and a few dozen of his friends get mowed down? Where's God in that? Or how could it be that the 20 elementary school kids in Connecticut on a Friday, you know, they haven't had a chance to experience the world on any level other than being a 5 or 6 year old, they get mowed down in class. Where's God there? And for a long time, especially early in my career, I would really struggle with that. And I still do sometimes. But a pastor of mine years ago, used to say all the time, it's like people who never question their faith, maybe they're not as faithful as they would have you believe. I question my faith a lot.
I think that's healthy. I think that's a healthy thing, actually. I do.
I wasn't going to share this with you, and after this, I know I've got to run, but I'm on the Instagram, and one of my favorite follows are these church signs. You ever see these church signs?
Yes.
that are funny that people post.
Oh,
usually,
yeah.
On Sunday. I came across one today. I'll leave you with this because I saw it, and I think it's perfect for the times in which we find ourselves. This is from, and I don't know where this church is, but it's Journey of Faith Church. And the sign reads, "Jesus rode an ass into Jerusalem. Keep yours at home."
I love that. That is a great note to close on. That is a great note to close on. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming out. We got to have you back again. This is a really great conversation. I appreciate your time.
I enjoyed this, Billy. I'm glad that this is what you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye bye, brother.
So that was Craig Melvin, and I had a great time talking with him. I think getting a chance to get to know people behind their story, who they are, and how they've gotten where they are is such a powerful thing. I love stories, and it's just like he said, he's a sucker for a good story. I am too, and I appreciate Craig coming on to share his story with us. Now, I want to just have a little commercial here for you guys, and I try not to do too many of these, but I want you guys to really try out PureFlix.com, head on over to PureFlix.com right now. There are thousands of movies, TV shows, documentaries, educational materials. There is so much content over at PureFlix.com, and you get a free week. So why not try it? Head on over to PureFlix.com today. And now, having said that, I want to move into our next interview. And I don't think I said in the beginning of the show who was going to be coming on, but this is a friend of mine, somebody who I've actually admired my entire life. It's someone I've followed his ministry, and he's been a great inspiration to me. It's Pastor Greg Laurie. Now, I have been talking on my other podcast, the Billy Hollowell Podcast, about Greg and about something that happened earlier this week. We covered it over on the PureFlix Insider over at insider.pureflix.com. We have a story about it, but basically President Trump tweeted that he was going to be watching the Palm Sunday service at harvest.org, which is Greg Laurie's church, and an insane thing happened. 1.3 million people showed up to watch that sermon, And in addition to the 1.3 million, there were 11,207 people who accepted Christ. And so it was just this amazing moment. And I reached out to Greg and I was like, listen, I want to talk to you about this on the PureFlix podcast. I also want to talk just in general about the problem of pain. I think a lot of us have questions about pain right now. We may be experiencing pain amid coronavirus, whether it's an actual illness, whether it's someone else in our lives who's sick. Maybe it's just the isolation of being home. There are economic issues, job issues. There is so much to be praying for and thinking about. And so I wanted to talk with Greg about all of that. And so with no further ado, I want to welcome Pastor Greg Laurie to the PureFlix podcast. Hey, Greg, how's it going today?
Billy, good to see you. Good to be with you. And I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good to see you. So I noticed, and I had to reach out to you because I think a lot of us noticed that you had a pretty amazing thing happen. And there's always amazing stuff happening over at Harvest, but Palm Sunday, you had, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 1.3 million people tune in. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, our numbers have been growing quite dramatically since we went online exclusively. Like prior to COVID-19, we would have 60,000 people watch online, which is very good. But week one, when we were exclusively online, it was 250,000. The next week, like 350,000 and 550,000. But then when the president sent out his tweet, we jumped up to 1.3 million. So a tweet from the president is a good thing. And it brought a lot of interesting people, a lot of new people, people that have never been to our site before or really didn't know anything about us. But I think that is why so many people responded, because we had so many visitors, and I think non-believers, that when I extended the invitation, it was an amazing response. Think about this, Billy. The first, three weeks or so, we had 10,000 people respond saying they wanted Christ in their life watching our webcast. But the one week of the last week, we had 11,000. So put it together, great mathematician that I am, that's 21,000. So, you know, that's amazing. I mean, if you would have told me, you know, 3 months ago, hey, you're going to reach 21,000 people coming to Christ online, I would have thought, how would that happen? Well, I think the reason it's happening is because of this coronavirus. People are scared. People are asking the questions that they probably should be asking all the time, like, hey, what would happen if I died? Am I prepared for eternity? What about my relationship with God? So I think people are just listening more than they normally listen. And I don't know how long this window will last, but I'll say this. As awful as this coronavirus is, I'm seeing God work despite it. And of course, last time I checked, Romans 8:28 is still in the Bible. And that promises that God will cause all things to work together for good to those that love him. And I'm seeing that in people coming to the Lord and families coming together and people taking time for the things that matter. Having said that, we're all praying that this curve flattens, that we can get out again. I think we need to reboot our economy. But most significantly for me, I think we need to open our churches up again. And so I hope that happens sooner rather than later.
Well, you know, it's amazing because you and I have talked many times and you've written and spoken extensively on the discussion of having a spiritual revolution again, of seeing, you know, people come to Christ in droves. And it has been fascinating to watch what you just said. And then we're also seeing polling numbers that show, I think it was 21% of people who are not believers reading their Bibles, right? And Bibles flying off of shelves. There are Walmarts reporting that, different locations of Walmart, that they've run out of Bibles, right? So you start to hear that and you start to wonder, is this the kind of thing that could spark that sort of, you know, rejuvenation of faith?
Well, listening to all the stats you just said, it sounds like it is happening, doesn't it? I mean, that hasn't happened in any recent history I'm aware of. And so that is a phenomenon. You know, revival and awakening, we use these words, and I don't know if we always understand them. You know, an awakening is when someone comes to life spiritually. So you can have a personal spiritual awakening. A community can have an awakening. A nation can have an awakening, et cetera. So that sounds like a spiritual awakening and or revival or another, you know, Jesus revolution, if you want to call it that. But, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if we're praying, Lord, send a revival, and this comes along and revival comes as a result of it. It's sort of like when we pray for patience, Lord, give me patience, and he sends trials. We say, wait, I didn't pray for trials, but the Bible says the testing of your faith produces patience or endurance. So we say, Lord, send revival. The Lord allows this. I mean, if God sent it, if God allowed it, it's kind of irrelevant, not that significant, because God's in control, and this thing did not catch God by surprise. So it's here. The Lord knows it's here. He knows when it's going to end, but he's working because people are paying attention. And so to me, I just wrote an article, actually. It's over at Christianity Today, and the title of it is America, or is the coronavirus bringing about a spiritual awakening? And I sort of raise that question and dive into some stats, but actually you had a stat there in the Bible reading I was not aware of. So text that to me.
I will.
Might use that later.
I will. Yeah. I mean, it's been blowing me away to see. And there was also another study that said over 40%, it was over 50% of the country. So more than half of the country was praying for God to end the coronavirus. And I thought that's really interesting to me too, right? That there's this turn that people have when something like this, and I've never experienced anything like this, but when something like this happens, that you have to turn inward and start asking those questions, because where else are you to turn? You're in your house. You're not going to nightclubs. You're not going to church even. You're not going anywhere. You're in your house, right? And so that calls us, I think, to those broader questions of humanity that we're forced to think about. We're not as distracted right now, which is fascinating to me. But I wanted to point out something, and I did a reflection on my podcast last night, and I don't know if your ears were ringing, but I was talking about the fact, and I'm not going to get into politics here, I think it's interesting that people like the president, who are people in the limelight, they tend to be controversial sometimes, they're called out as, oh, that's a terrible example for Christianity, and oh, that's not a person we should be turning to. And yet, what the president did, which was a simple tweet that said, hey, I'm going to be tuning into Harvest, you can check it out too, actually sent you already have a ton of people coming, but 1.3 million people, 11,207 people, many of them people who might not have come otherwise. It just spoke to me that God can, it reminded me, and I already knew this, God can use any of us, right? And will use any of us. And so I don't know if you had any other reflections on that in particular, but I thought that was fascinating.
Well, you know, the Bible says the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord, and he'll move it as he wants to. You know, the president didn't have to be specific and say, I'm watching this webcast in particular, but he did. And he keeps raising this issue. Look, let's say this happened a number of years ago, and President Obama said, I'm going to be watching the service at Harvest. I would rejoice in that. It doesn't matter to me if the president is a Democrat or a Republican. I just think when you're the leader of the free world, you have influence, no question. And when you say, I'm going to watch a church service, that's an acknowledgement of you're saying that I need God in my life. Now, you know, God will determine where the president is at spiritually. But all I know is he used his bully pulpit to point people in a good direction. And I think he's going to do it again this Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. I've heard the rumblings. And so to another service, not ours. And I'm glad of that. And I think that's something that's so needed. And people should rejoice in that. This is not a time for partisan bickering. This is a time to set those things aside and work together and pray together and try to get this thing resolved in every way that we can. You know, one thing I raised in the article I wrote for Christianity Today was, I said, for those of you that are still holding services, I don't think that's a good idea. I wish you would stop. And then I said, you may think it's trusting the Lord, but actually it can be testing the Lord. You know, but having said that, we're doing this for now, but yet I'm concerned that this does not go on too long.
Right.
And I'm concerned that there's not government overreach here and that they don't take this power they have in this moment and use it in a wrong way. So I think you've seen the president indicate that he really wants churches to be open again. Not that long ago, he talked about hoping churches could be open for Easter. Of course, that didn't happen, but that was optimistic. But I'm hoping we will be open soon. So we're all praying for this thing to come to an end. But having said that, while we're in this storm, God is at work doing some amazing things. When I'm seeing thousands of people coming to Jesus, I have to rejoice in that.
Well, and you're the guy who's out there doing these huge, amazing events, and God brings so many people in to those events. And yet it's so interesting to me to watch you. And again, you've always had a big following, but to have 1.3 million people come to you virtually, I would imagine that's something you never expected you would see happen. And yet here we are, you're having these, they're even bigger than the stadium events, right? Online right now. And to your point about reopening, I think as Christians and as Americans, even more broadly, you have to think through the way that we react to things and the long-term effect of things. You know, the decisions we make in a crisis maybe aren't always the best long-term decisions. And so there's a lot of real questions there that I think we need to ask. And so I'm glad you brought that up just about overreach and things like that, just to be careful. But also, you know, the church is meeting still. I think your point on that is 100% accurate. We need to be smart and you know, follow God. But at the same time, the laws that are reasonable to protect people, we need to be following those as well. So and in your case, look what it's done. I mean, God has used it to bring people right to you guys. So we're almost to the end here. But I wanted to ask you, because in the midst of all of this, there are a lot of people who are suffering. There are people who are sick. There are family members who haven't been able to be with those who are falling ill and even dying. They're separated from them. And there's a lot of confusion in the midst of all this as well. What do you say to those who they kind of shake their finger at God and they say, you know, why would a loving God allow this? That's always the question, right? No matter what the event is. How do you respond to that as a pastor?
Yeah, it's a hard one, of course, you know, and there's no easy answer to it. But I think of when Jesus went to the tomb of Lazarus, who had died. And we read that he wept. Now, that's interesting because Jesus was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. So why did he weep? He knew it was all going to turn out well in the end. Well, he wept because this death is an aberration. This was never part of God's original plan. You know, our first parents, Adam and Eve, ate of the forbidden fruit. Sin entered the world. The curse of sin entered the world. So there are things that happen in life that are inexplicable, things that don't make sense. So here's what I think, Billy. I'm not going to trade what I do know for what I don't know. I don't know why God allows tragedy. I don't know why we hear these horrible stories of people dying, like why that's happening. But here's what I do know. I know God loves us. I know that God wants to be a part of our life. I know that eternity is real. I know if we put our faith in Jesus Christ, we can go to heaven. So the focus I have right now is trying to reach out to people and have them prepared for eternity, but also finding that relationship they need with God and having that relationship grow stronger each and every day. The COVID-19 is like a storm. We're in the middle of a storm, or maybe we're getting toward the end of the storm. I don't really know. But I know this much. In the Bible, we read about the storm that came in the Sea of Galilee. Happened a number of times, actually. But in one instance, you know, Jesus was on board their little boat and they cried out, "Lord, don't you care that we're perishing?" And he came up and rebuked the storm, said, "Peace, be still." So here's my word for people who are suffering. You're not alone. Jesus is with you in this storm. The storm is going to come to an end. And I hope that you come closer to him as a result of this. And if you do, you may look back in this time as a more blessed time of your life, though there were difficulties and challenges in it.
I love that. Well, that's a great note to end on here. And if people want to tune in for Easter Sunday and any other Sunday moving forward, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, we're doing all of our services at harvest.org. So that's our website. We also have a Harvest app that you can download for Apple TV, for the Roku box. You can download it for your tablet or your phone. And you can watch it live as it happens. And so we're going to start our, our Easter services this weekend, starting with Good Friday. We're going to have Good Friday services. And we're actually going to have, I don't know if you call it virtual communion, but we're going to receive communion together. So I'm going to ask people to get the elements together in their home and join us for communion. That's Good Friday. Then we start our Easter services on Saturday, and they play all day Sunday from morning to evening. And I have special musical guest Michael Tate from DC Talk and the Newsboys. I have Matt Redman, great worship leader, and Phil Wickham as well. And the title of my message is Easter is for Everyone.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I always appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Billy. Good to be with you.
So there you have it, Pastor Greg Laurie. That was an incredible episode. We had two great conversations with people in the faith space and the media space. We had Craig Melvin and then Greg Laurie. Listen, I want you guys to be tuning into this show, but I also want to know what you're thinking about the show. Are you liking it? Are you not liking it? Do you want certain segments that maybe we're not offering? What is it that you're looking for here with the PureFlix podcast? You can actually go over to anchor.fm and leave me a voicemail. I'm opening up the voicemail chain. You can leave a message there. Let us know what you love, any questions you have. Maybe you even have a question for Craig or for Greg Laurie. We can always try to get those sent over, but I really want to know what you're thinking about the show. I also want to encourage you, head over to iTunes, wherever you're listening to this, right? Whatever platform that is, and give this show a rating. Let people know what you're thinking about the show. We hope you're enjoying it, and I hope you head on over to pureflix.com. Again, 1 week free trial. You can check out so many different things over there. There's movies, TV shows, kids content. There's a list a mile long, probably 12 miles long, of titles and content that you can check out over at pureflix.com today. And tune in next week for another episode of the show.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow PureFlix on Facebook at facebook.com/pureflix and on Twitter at PureFlix. And be sure to log on today to pureflix.com. Thanks for listening to the Pure Flix podcast.